You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, it's the double-headed Dream Team edition with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, both in Johannesburg. Now, Viv, last week we started with David and he was describing the NVIDIA results. And this week we're starting with you, and you're going to describe two things. One, the sell-off, of which NVIDIA was a part, and then secondly, the DOJ, which stuck its oar in even after the share price had a bit of a shocker. Let's start with the sell-off first. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, I mean, it was, in dollar terms, I think the biggest sell-off ever. I think there's less than 30 companies listed in the world that have a higher market cap than the sell-off of NVIDIA in one day. Mm-hmm. It was $280 billion in one day.
One company.
Think about it.
Yeah.
One company in one day, $280 billion in the sell-off. So, yeah, it is a huge amount of money being lost. But, you know, also, a couple of things. I don't think the DOJ really has a case here. Unless they can say, for instance, that these guys are kind of like, you know, monopolizing TSMC in some way or something, you know, you can't penalize someone for being the best. You know what I mean?
Exactly what I said in a tweet, actually, and David might have seen it. But, yeah exactly right. And my thing said, Viv, sorry to interrupt you, it says, how dare you be so successful? And NVIDIA says, what are you talking about? It says, well, you've got a 95% market share. And they said, well, our chips are the best. And people pay up for the best. And then the DOJ comes back and says, we want you to make crappy chips at cheaper prices so you can compete with your inferior peers. And it's exactly what you're saying, Viv.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, this isn't the thing that hasn't happened in the past. I mean, I did a report recently on Google, and I said the DOJ is looking at Google as well for a possible breakup or some kind of agreement about, you know, monopoly practices. I said, if that had to be come to a choice, you'd rather just break up than have any kind of agreement. Because look at Microsoft. Steve Ballmer was there for over a decade. And the share price, I think, fell in that period of time. It was down over the decade. And since such a deal has taken over, it happens to coincide with, of course, some of these restrictions being removed as well. That share price has gone up multiples in less time than Steve Ballmer basically took to get it down, I think, like 8% of his tenure. When the government gets involved in something like this here, it's a disaster for a company. But the one thing I can say about NVIDIA is that all they seem to be doing is making the best chip.
Like exactly.
They don't have a network effect where they basically have to have NVIDIA chips to do NVIDIA stuff. They're not bundling stuff, for instance, like Microsoft does, where they bring on Teams to take on Slack or something like that there, or Internet Explorer to take out Netscape. They're not like a Google where basically, you know, you're using Android and paying for people to have Android in the system to basically, you know, make sure Google is the number one search engine out there. None of that is happening here. It's just the best chip. And unfortunately, nobody else can, or fortunately for NVIDIA, nobody else seems to be able to quite crack this code.
Yeah. So, David, we've been talking about this. And we've spoken on numerous occasions about NVIDIA being a double-edged sword. You have to have it if you're a fund manager, but if you do have it, you're vulnerable to the sort of thing that happened on Tuesday, I think it was. Mm. And so it's actually happened. But if you look at your graphs, I know you've got graphs in front of you at your fingertips, you probably say, well, this year it's gone from there to there, and it's only come back to where it was in March or April or something like that. Yeah. Have you got that sort of information? Just to contextualize what Viv has just been saying.
No, well, it's exactly that. I'll just put up, hold on a sec. I'll try and get the chart up here. But it's, you know, in fact, I wrote an article for Business Day, which is published tomorrow.
Yes.
And I ended off with exactly that. You know, the trend is your friend. I put it a little more articulately than that. And I said, if everything's still pointing upwards and, you can trust the numbers that are coming out, there's no need to do anything. You know, just stay with it. And, you know, it's against that I'm staying, you know, still staying with it. What's very interesting is that we use FactSet, and FactSet, you know, have these consensus forecasts, and they list all the analysts, they take all the analysts' research and so on and put it together. And I looked, and I can do it now, and I can call out all the names, but, there's not one analyst that was bearish. There might have been two that were hold instead of outperform or overweight or buy. And the price, the target price on which the analysts have put NVIDIA is, something like 150 from where they are today at 108. So the point I make, and I might be a bit cynical in what I'm saying now, is here you are. These are analysts who spend their entire time looking at tech shares. They like VIV. You know, they go into all of it. They understand what they're doing. They talk to the company, and they're all positive on the outlook. What's not so positive are strategists from all the big firms, you know, who probably, you know, for whatever reason are kind of indifferent and are calling the end of AI, and this is a fad, and this is, you know, the expectations are too high. So I'm saying, okay, you know, I'd rather go with the people I know and talk to who I trust from past experience and, you know, who I've followed for some time. So I think this will blow out. You know, this will blow over. I think there's enormous amount of speculation. You know, this makes Hollywood's bets look like a kindergarten board game. You know, yeah. It's, you know, these betting sites, it's these, whoever's playing in this area are playing for big, big stakes. The other point I want to make, and, you know, we can talk about this. Okay. So if AI is going to run out, where are the next market leaders? You know, what's the next market leading? You know, what you're going to put your money into? What? You know? In other words.
Well, you don't know, yeah. Because, I mean, and of course, AI is going to be with us forever, certainly for our lifetimes. But human beings have a funny way of finding something new. I mean, it's amazing. You think, oh, gosh, the opportunity cost of not being in NVIDIA and AI was just a fad and it's gone now. What do I do? No, there's always something. But short term, you're quite right. If AI fizzled out, then where do you go?
Before I'll give Viv a chance now, but I mean, I'm saying we overcomplicate things. You know what I mean? We overcomplicate our lives with, I think, in the industry in which we are. It's actually not difficult. You know, when I look at companies now, you look at them, I understand them. I said, that's a good business. I'm going to put it away. I'll carry on. Let's see how they do. But we're in an industry which needs to move from minute to minute. And, you know, everybody's got to outmaneuver the person next to them and so on. It's quite strange. And I think we're going through a period like that at the moment.
I don't think Viv is someone that overcomplicates his life. I think he's very similar to you. You buy low, you sell high. And it's as simple as that. Viv, am I simplifying this?
Well, a couple of things. Firstly, let's just say AI stop right now. Okay, at no more AI development for the next, say, 5 years. It will still take a lot of time for the full implication of what we already have created to work its way through the system. I mean, there'll be jobs created and destroyed by what we have right now, you know, over the next 5-10 years, because it hasn't fully, like, you know, gone through the economy. The second thing is that the thing that we have doing right now is we're waiting for the next round of these models to come out. And what you've got to understand is these things are working, these chips. So this is why NVIDIA is such a powerful thing. Normally you have commoditization when people catch up to you. The thing with AI right now, with AI chips at least, is that they're improving at about roughly 10 times every 2 years. This is about 5 times faster than Moore's law, which is doubling every 2 years. And so what that means is that people have to wait for the new chip to build a new model. They can't just put more money into the old model to get the new stuff going out here, because they have to wait for the new chip, which is, like I said, 10 times more powerful every couple of years, to get the bigger model out there. And so we're going to get these models coming out really quickly. And the thing I want you guys to note as well is that it's probably going to accelerate, because I don't know if you saw Elon Musk Grok 2 that came out, right?
Mm.
It's now ranked third among the AI systems out there. It's ahead of, like, a whole bunch of other companies that have been in this space for a long time. And the reason for this is quite simple. Musk does not care about safety. Okay. No, this is his trick. Why does his spaceships go into space and, for instance, Amazon can't, or such Bezos can't, or Boeing can't? It's because he just sends them up. They blow up. Why did he blow up? Try it again. Fix that. It blows up again. Fix that. Blows up again. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. You know what I mean? That's what he's doing with AI right now. And he went from 0 to number 3 or number 2, depending on the rankings, in about 3 or 4 months. And he's not going to be the only one. There's a guy called Leon Aschenberger. He's a former AI guy, and he did a kind of a forecast about what to expect from AI over the next, say, decade or two. And he basically said that if this stuff gets as powerful as it is, it's going to be a race. In a race like this year, you either are number one or you're lost. Mm-hmm. And you're going to start seeing more and more guys starting to basically be more aggressive. Remember, this is just how they were created. DeepMind was the thing that created AI, wrote for Google. Then OpenAI was created to be safer than DeepMind, right? Then the guys from Anthropic left, were working at OpenAI, left OpenAI to make Anthropic to be safer than OpenAI. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everybody has been trying to be safer. OpenAI literally was started as a nonprofit for safety. Anthropic has it as number one principle to be the safest, never least the first model. Can you imagine those guys trying to build the safest model going against somebody that's willing to just blow things up? It's going to be really, really difficult for us to basically keep track of what's going to be happening. Because another thing to mention, it took about a year between the time they developed GPT-4 to the time they released it to the public. That whole time was about safety, right? It took about Anthropic said they will never release the strongest model they can. They'll always release a model that's not as strong as somebody else's. Grok went from zero to nothing, like I said, in 3 or 4 months. There is no safety testing happening there at a big scale. That's why you can see those pictures of Trump and Kamala on a plane heading into the Twin Towers. Okay. Yes. So the speed that we saw the last couple of years, just understand, that is gone. It will not be the same. It will have to be faster.
Okay. Mm. Understood. Well put. And your knowledge of this whole thing and the players is encyclopedic, Aviv Govender. Let's come back to Earth, David. There's been loads of results out, and there's been a couple more today as well, Sunlamp, etc. But what I want to focus on, David, is retail, because we've had Woolies, we've had ShopRite, uh-huh. and we've had yes. Spar. Now, you see, Woolies yeah. is interesting, and everyone keeps... Yeah. Every time I say to a commentator, surely it's now time. This is a big grocery store. This is a big grocery store, and every single time, groceries outperform apparel and furniture or homeware, whatever it is. So separately listed. Second thing is ShopRite. They said, we're no good at furniture. We'll sell it to Pepco. So they did that. So they're saying, stick to what we're good at. And Spar says, we're no good in Poland. It's far too complicated. We sell that. But the terms of the deal, someone explained it to me yesterday, are onerous, David.
Yeah. Well, they have to take over the debt.
Exactly.
You know, they sell it, but they didn't sell the debt. And they could only sell it without the debt, which is something like, I don't know, what's a 3 billion or something, Rand.
Exactly.
It's an enormous amount. I don't know the exact term, but that was my simple interpretation, that in order to get it off their hands and, you know, to stop bleeding money, they had to take that. Now, I mean, that's a huge debt to bring onto your balance sheet that you're going to have to work out from here, where things are not exactly great. So it's, you know, it's a company under a huge amount of pressure. And remember, Spar is not a grocer. It's a buying organization.
Yes.
It does have its own shops, but it mainly has franchisees or people who run Spars. And what they do is they buy cheap for them and take a turn on what they sell. So it's, you know, Lindsay, when I think back, I mean, I always used to, I was very proud of what we had achieved, especially in the retailers. But lately, you've had Spar, you've had Massmart, and now Pick and Pay just imploding.
Yeah.
You know, literally imploding. But what's happened, despite the fact that ShopRite's numbers were slightly disappointing or little down, there's nothing to worry about them. But they stand, you know, they are far ahead of everybody else, with kind of Woolworths just in their wake, you know, just trying to catch up. You know, Woolworths has also got its issues, not on the food side, but certainly on the apparel side.
Yes. So where do we go? I mean, you can't just blanket buy these things. You've got to be very, very selective. Obviously, Spar and Pick and Pay, well, recently Spar, Pick and Pay longer term, medium to long term has been horrible. Yeah, and even Woolies, it's all very good. One is doing well, but the other one drags it down as a company as a whole in Australia, of course. Anyway, I don't know. Where do you shop, Viv? And are you loyal to one particular shop and therefore you know a little bit about it? And if you were in retail on the JSE, then you would sort of lean towards that one. That's a ridiculously simplistic argument. But what do you think about retail?
Look, I mean, I'm mostly, because of allergy reasons, shop at Woolies because of the allergy issues to deal with. But when it comes to buying retailers, I've been quite loyal and only buying ShopRite, quite frankly. In terms of like as an investment. And the reason for it is quite simple. I think that we are about to go through a massive change in the way shopping occurs right now. David can attest to this. The amount of like times you see those little bikes on the road with the little ShopRite sticker on the back of it, delivering stuff, has gone up dramatically. You know what I mean? The cost is ridiculously low. The convenience is there. In that environment, basically, are you going to have five apps on your phone or are you going to have one? You're probably going to have one. Okay, there's probably going to be, and ShopRite already has a loyalty system already, where you get, I think, a certain amount of money beyond a certain amount of like pricing, you get a free delivery effectively. In that environment, I can foresee massive consolidation in the retail grocery space in South Africa, and the biggest guy is going to win. And right now, that is ShopRite by a mile. I just don't see how Pick and Pay or the other or Spar, especially with Spar's model, can compete in this environment against the ShopRite. I do think in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, we're just going to see a larger share of deliveries, and ShopRite is going to dominate that.
It's got a head start, hasn't it?
There is the move to go down, you know, Boxer and YouSave and so on. You know, we have a massive population who are incredibly cost conscious and literally will go from one shop to another to save a couple of rand. That's it. But, I think Viv's, you know, things are changing, things, the consolidation. I can talk from a US experience where, you have, you know, these overnight where you can phone up at 8 o'clock or put an order in at 8 o'clock in the evening for milk, a lettuce, a loaf of bread, whatever it is. And early the next morning, there's a knock on the door and there it is. You know, in a similar way, it's they're incredible deliveries there, you know, where you don't have to. If you're a working person, you know, you don't have to run to the shops or stop off the train and go and buy. So I think the convenience here and Viv, I must tell you, I live very close to Bluebird, you know, where you've got both Woolworths and you've got Checkers. And the whole time from Bluebird, you just see these drivers just shoving out. And I've actually spoken to them. If you go down into the basement, I think it's a third basement down in Blueberg and that, there are numerous chaps, you know, there already. And you can't believe how much they deliver. You know, I see them, I've asked them, and try to get into it. You know, they've got, they can take, you know, 4, 5, 6, maybe up to 10 at a time. You know, the 10 different, orders and off they go, you know, and it's very, very slick service. They've even got their own football team. So.
Have you heard of, talking about online deliveries, have you heard of a FTSE listed company? It's in the FTSE 250 called Ocado. Have either of you heard of that?
No.
Okay. Ocado was established. Oh, no, that's the history of who started it. It's Ocado Group PLC is a British business based in Hatfield, England, which licenses grocery technology. It owns a 50% share in the UK grocery retail business Ocado.com. The other 50% is owned by Marks and Spencers. It's listed on the LSE. But the interesting thing is that it said, well, okay, you're a competitor, Morrisons, but we'll deliver for you as well. So what it does, you phone Ocado. I've been in London with someone, and you phone up Ocado, and you can pick stuff from different shops, and they service a group of 4 or 5 top retailers, and everybody benefits from it. And I wonder if that could happen in South Africa. Okay, ShopRite at the moment does it on its own, but maybe people could, someone could adopt an Ocado-style business model and do it there. But certainly it's been hugely successful. I mean, it really has. I mean, its listing was a massive success, and it does very well. But have a look at Ocado. It's a good one. Anyway, in the Netherlands, if I phone them up now, I'll probably get it Saturday morning. It's embarrassingly bad.
It's David is saying overnight. 60-60 is 60 minutes, huh? It's the same, it's like the same hour. So you order 60-60, it comes to you, this like, the thing is that it's about 35 rands. So think about the petrol to go to the shop. Even if you're taking a taxi, 35 rand is equivalent to that. It comes to you at home, you know. So even the thing with South Africa is that, yes, we have poor people, but we also have poor people that work for less money. Yeah. So when it comes to delivery services, the delivery drivers are paid a lot less. So in a way, the one disadvantage where you're going to talk about, you know, poor people being cost conscious, there's also cheaper drivers delivering things. But I mean, $35 is $2. Yeah. 35 rands is $2. Yeah. $2 to have a delivery. Your house in an hour.
Yes. And as you say,
the point is things are changing, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether I was speaking to Lindsay or whether it was when we were talking last week. That's why I say when interest rates do come down and people start to spend, you can't go back pre-COVID, or you can't go back and choose the companies you think are going to benefit. So much has changed. This is all the outcome of COVID, where we've got used to staying at home, eating at home, you know, cooking at home, getting lazy, not going down to the shops. And all of these have developed from that. But habits have changed. And as you say, you know, the more those habits change, the more, the better the service. Yeah, it is going to change, you know, the people that benefit.
Just before we move on to the markets, Ocado processes 400,000 retail deliveries requests per week, and that's just in the UK, and it's also Europe-wide as well. Right, dollar rand, 17.73. British pound against the rand, 23.32. The euro rand is 19.65. The euro dollar, 110.85 after today's employment data, which David will describe in a moment. British pound, 131.50. That's been on a charge for so long now. What else have we got? We've got the gold price at 25.06, which is up nearly $13 an ounce. Platinum up 19 to 9.31. Palladium at 9.35, which is up 8, and other commodities. David, you remember I sent you a graph of Brent crude, and I said it's about to fall off a cliff. Yeah, well, it started. It's scrambling down the slope, isn't it? I mean, it's not it's not doing very well. Where's my CLB? Oh, there it is. Just before you get onto your observations on that, crude oil is up today. It's up about 1% for West Texas at $69.96, and Brent crude oil, which was below 73 yesterday, it's just coming off a bit now, 73.38, which is up nearly 1%. Natural gas up 6%. And what else have we got? Nothing really of interest. Copper up 1.1%, but still under pressure, $4.07 per pound. Right, the S&P 500 futures, massive day earlier in the week, suddenly turned red again, 55.14 for the September futures, down about 0.3%. The US 10-year Treasury is currently not coming up on my screen, so I'll go to the South African 10-year, which is also not coming up. They don't like the capital markets invested, investing.com at the moment. But, David, you were going to say something about Brent crude oil.
I think there's commodities are under pressure mainly because of China. There's a lot of concerns about China. And for evidence of this, if you go into the European markets, go have a look at the luxury stocks, Hermes, LVMH, Richemont, all of those have come down dramatically. You know, anything that's connected with Europe, with China from Europe is down. I'm looking at LVMH at the moment, down 3.8%. Hermes down 6.5%. L'Oreal, okay, that's holding up. But I'm trying to find some of the other Ferrari down 2%, so on. And these have been coming down over the last couple of days quite dramatically, all associated with the downgrading of Chinese growth and translating that into much lower demand coming from China in particular. Richemont down 1.7. I just found that now. So it is a story, and that's, you know, you've seen iron ore. The last time I looked at iron ore was around about 90, 92 in that region, dollars a ton. So I think Brent is also suffering as a result of that, concerns about falling demand. For why I'm so conscious of it and no one else seems to be that concerned is because it affects South Africa. You know, where platinum prices, we saw Neil Froneman's views on where palladium is going. And at the end, you know, we earn a lot of tax from our miners. And where we've had these dramatic cuts in revenue, it's going to flow through. You know, it's going to hurt us. So I know we're very excited about the local market and what's happening and GNU and various other things, but that side of it really disturbs me. You know, it's a concern that commodities remain where they are at the moment.
Speaking about Africa and commodities, Viv, I noticed there's Africa China, a shindig going on in China at the moment, I think in Beijing. And, you know, they've come out today and said, I think they're pledging $60 billion to Africa over the finance to Africa over the next 3 years. Oh. Now I look at this and people say, oh, isn't it great? You know, the great, the relationship's never been better. Am I being cynical, Viv, by saying there's only one reason that China is cozying up to Africa, and that is because they will finance infrastructure projects and mining and resources exploration and that sort of thing on their terms? Do the communities around a new mine benefit like it would if, for example, a South African financier was going into Africa with great ESG credentials? Am I being too cynical, Viv, about China and Africa?
I think you're not being cynical enough. I think nobody, even the South African ESG guys, are going in there with good intentions in mind. I think Glencore has done some stuff that we can not be proud of as South Africans. You know, obviously, it's not quite a South African company, but, you know, it is South African run. I think that if you look at internationally, if you're a smaller, resource-rich country, you're not going to get many friends out there. A recent example was Honduras. He's now being sued by some company because of some agreements, and these guys have been backed by what you would consider to be like the Silicon Valley kind of like charitable guys like Mark Andreessen and Sam Altman and those kind of guys have backed some endeavor in Honduras that might bankrupt that country. The same thing I think is happening here in Africa. We can't expect anyone to be charitable. That's not the way the world works. No deal is going to be great. The only fear I have here, or the only thing I think that has been done here, like you said, financing. We'll be financed to build infrastructure products, but it'll be built with Chinese machinery, Chinese labor, and Chinese firms doing the building. So it's kind of like, I think the example I'd give is there was a case a while back where someone was talking about Ukraine and the war in Ukraine and how the U.S. is giving money to the Ukraine. It turned out it wasn't giving money to the Ukraine. It was giving money to American manufacturers that were delivering products to the Ukraine. The same thing is happening here. It's likely going to be Chinese firms getting money from the Chinese government to build stuff in Africa. If you know what I mean. And I think that is the way it's going. And it kind of makes sense from their point of view because the property sector is such a big deal in China and it's pretty much collapsed at the moment. And they need to find some way to kind of rescue those companies. And this might be a roundabout way to kind of bail out their own construction sector.
Mm. They're trying to prop up their image as well. Mm. But the one thing about Africa is that I promise you these projects are not done. There's no free for lunch.
Of course not.
Many of those African leaders, I mean, you just know who they are. You know the kind of levels of democracy they have. It's probably the same as being here all the time. It's never done for the benefit of the country. Or it is done for the benefit of the country, but other people benefit as well along the way. Mm. And, you know, that's your ESG. It's a very worrying thing. The other thing is that I think all of these things, you know, the talk is very big, but the delivery is very small. I think what happens is Viv is right, and it ends up being a Chinese project, you know, done, and they send people out here to use all their equipment and so on, money and etc. But it's not done for free. You know, they don't walk away and say thank you very much and carry on.
Yeah, I've seen a few case studies of the way China goes in, brings in its own workers, its own everything. Oh. You're quite right. Sorry, Viv, for being less than viciously cynical about this. I shall amend my stance immediately. The South African 10-year bond 9.19%, and the US 10-year, the yield also falling in the last couple of days, down to 3.75%, having been 10 basis points higher. Not so long ago, I have to do Bitcoin because there are certain people that like it. 56,330 down just over 2%. Winners and losers, David, on the JSE on your screen, and I'll give you mine in a moment.
On my screen, I'll give you the winners. I just have to. I see SPARS picked up a little after yesterday. After that,
it was down 15% at one stage yesterday, wasn't it? After those Polish numbers.
MTN is, MTN up 3.9%, SAPI, Woolworths, Spa, Advitec, Coronation. Those seem to be the winners, Bidvest as well. In fact, there are more winners than losers, but we actually ended up, you know, up 0.25%, but it was mainly on the industrial side. On the negative side, I'm a bit strange about Harmony. They had very, very good numbers.
Yes.
But I see they down about 3.5%. I'm not sure what might have disturbed them in the results, whether they expected more. But then we've got Alphaman, Bytes, African Rainbow, Minerals, Nedbank, Standard Bank, Mr. Price, all in negative territory. But nothing dramatic. You know, there's no major moves. I'm talking about the big companies. I don't know if I go look at some of the smaller caps, there might be more moves. But you can give me yours and I'll look for.
Now, you've given all the ones, Sappy up 3.3. Telkom, you didn't mention 3.3 as well. And it's Telltale at the bottom down 2.5%. But you've given the main ones. We'll come to the indices with you in a moment, David. But Viv, after the US jobs numbers today, which is, you know, they're okay, but they're not quite as good as we've been used to. I think it's, you can go back to January 2021 since the numbers of this particular survey were in line with what we saw today. Is the US, Viv, going into a soft recession?
I think there is indications that it might have been so. I think it's pretty clear right now that the Fed waited too long.
Mm.
I mean, look, this is very difficult to catch, right? And the Fed almost never does. And I think it's just another example of just how history repeats itself. So they waited a bit too long. We've seen softer job numbers. We had that 1 million, virtually 818,000, I think, job reversal, you know, come through recently where they removed that from the last year's estimates. I think it's pretty clear that the economy in the U.S. is weaker than had been anticipated. And I think the Fed is probably reacting, or would have to react a bit more strongly than the market anticipated. But the weird thing is that I think right now we are in a period of where bad numbers are bad numbers and good numbers are good numbers. Normally it's bad numbers, maybe good numbers, if there's an increased chance of a rate cut coming through. Right now, I think the market's pricing in basically rate cuts for the foreseeable future. And I don't think they're going to be expecting, unless it's a really, really bad number, the Reserve Bank or the Federal Reserve is going to basically be cutting by more than that. And so I do think that if it does, it's not going to make too much of a difference in terms of market performance. So I think for the foreseeable future, when we see bad numbers, you're going to take them as bad numbers for the market as well.
Okay. David, what was I going to say? Yes. So closing indices, please. And the value traded, if you would.
Yeah, I'll go to the value traded. It came to about just over 21.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Naspers, First Rand, Standard Bank, Harmony, Capitec. And most of the big traders in there, nothing outstanding. It's always Naspers as they buy back their shares. They're always up there. And the banks have been very, very big traders in terms of, you know, regularly money going into the banks. Just the all share ended. We actually bounced down and bounced up. We bounced down before the auction and bounced up after the auction. We ended up 0.28% at 82147. The resource index down slightly, down 0.18%. Nothing really in the miners, as we mentioned. Banks down 0.5%. The overall financial index up 0.4%. I think it must have been helped by some of the life insurers and that. And the industrial index up 0.8%. I'm not quite sure what has driven that up. With Richemont down and that, it could be Naspers and Prosus, but that's about. Lindsay, the one segment that's doing well and it's always up again, up another 1% today, has been property.
Property, yes. People keep telling me this.
Yeah. Every day there's buying a property. You know, maybe expecting rates to come down fairly dramatically, which would take the the overdraft rates and make the rates that you're getting now on property fairly attractive. And things seem to, there's a level of improvement. I don't think it's dramatic, but, we're getting better noises coming out of the property business. But every day I look here and, I see the index in the green, sometimes even when the overall market is down.
Okay. Two questions, one for each of you. Viv. Let's say that somebody phones you up tomorrow and says, "Listen, Mr. Govender, I heard you talking to that that wise man Shapiro, and also that Williams fella. And I want to give you, I want to give you 20 million rand, and I want you to build me an AI portfolio, but with a focus on NVIDIA. At what point do you say, okay, NVIDIA now presents good value, good old fashioned solid valuation? Is it when it comes down to half of its recent high, 70 to 80 or something? Or do you say, okay, I'll start easing you into the market straight away, sir? What is your answer to this chap?
Well, I think quite frankly, if you had to look at just where we are with NVIDIA at the moment, I think that it doesn't have, matter what NVIDIA does. It matters what the technology that of the people that use NVIDIA is turning out to be like. If they, in like the next version of GPT comes out, GPT-5 comes out, or Grok 3 comes out, and there is a significant jump, and this stuff is doing multimodal stuff, or we're getting the Optimus robot announcement, and this stuff is like, you know, I don't know if you saw the figure robot recently with the little video they did hugging that girl and whatnot. If those things turn out to be real, I mean, these things are cheap at the moment. If I have we hit a plateau, I think then you might see, if not AI being, you know, it's called forgotten about, but you'll have a chance for Intel and AMD to catch up. NVIDIA relies on the fact that the speed of technology improving is so fast that its competitors are just being left in the dust. If the technology improvement slows down, that I think would be the main thing. It's not about NVIDIA itself. It's about what its chips can do.
Okay, good answer, David. You like to stick with things, and you're sticking with luxury goods because eventually the Chinese economy, through various stimulatory processes, will get back to where it was, and commodities will turn. We know it's a big cycle, the commodity cycle.
Yeah.
When it's really bad, it destroys people. I mean, look at companies like Kumba Iron Ore, for example, when it was in the 20s, for goodness sake. So you're going to stick with luxury goods. But if you had stuck with Aston Martin when it listed...
No, I'm not. I haven't.
No, I know you haven't. But if you had done, and people say, well, you know, you can't go wrong with this, it's a brilliant brand, and James Bond and everything else, you would have lost 96% in 6 years.
You've got to be very careful where you put your money. Very, very careful. And for that reason, you know, I still like Hermes and I still like Ferrari, simply because of they're not as heavily exposed to China. And also, they control their production. Or they control their supply, both of those companies. I've learned in the past where we've got worrying and panicking. You know, we sell good companies. You've got to learn to ride these out as well, because they turn around faster than they've fallen, and that's the big worry. I must say I have got a concern about LVMH, because I'm not quite sure this strategy might work. You know, when they start to go into hotels and restaurants and try to brand everything other than the goods for which they were well known, I get a bit concerned. You know, so I've still got my eye on that, but I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be, influenced by these kind of day-to-day movements. And China's a huge economy, and something will be done there that will
definitely
kind of turn it around. Yeah.
Okay. Jolly good. Gentlemen, thanks for your extended time this evening. Thanks very much for your insights. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, both from Johannesburg. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.